Last time we saw Isaiah encountering, a close encounter with the Lord. In that vision in which he saw the throne of God and the Lord sitting on the throne and the cherubim and the seraphim around the throne, singing, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts." And now he is back in the valley, so to speak, and he is going to stand before another king of sorts, an idolatrous, wicked, and fearful king. A king that is going to have an encounter with some enemies, yet scheming, planning, trying anything he can do to figure out a way to get around this one. Ahaz comes mercifully. I mean, it always amazes me, God's mercy, how he reaches out to us when we least deserve it. And yet, that's God's MO. It's what he does. He is gracious and merciful and compassionate. The world tries to twist that and make it seem God is hard and, you know, expecting a lot, and he's got that thunderbolt just waiting for you if you get out of line. But in reality, God is looking for ways. He's searching for ways to reach us, because that is his mercy. And he went so far as to send his only begotten Son, knowing that that is the way that he could provide salvation for us. So Isaiah comes to this king, gives him a word. He responds in a certain way that's quite interesting. And then from that, we see an amazing promise that the Lord gives in this time of crisis. So let's jump in and see what he has for us in chapter 7. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahaz. Now that's quite a big jump from the time Uzziah died, then the reign of Jotham, not much said there through Isaiah, and now Ahaz, Jotham's son. Jotham was a good king. Ahaz was a wicked king. Ahaz had a son, Hezekiah, who was a good king. So here's a bad king sandwiched between two good kings. His father was good and his son was good, and we don't know what happened to him. But he lived in a time that there were some unique challenges with the nation. At this time, the kingdom was divided, of course. Remember when Solomon's son Rehoboam blew it and didn't really seek the counsel of the elders, didn't listen to them, listened to the peer group that he had, and made some foolish choices, thought he was going to try to be tough as Solomon, ended up splitting the kingdom. 10 northern tribes said, "We have nothing to do with you anymore," and they left. Jeroboam took them. And they started worshiping on their own terms. You know, there are times when people get frustrated with the way God deals with them and the way that maybe the doors that are closed, and maybe he didn't answer the prayer request that they thought he should answer. And so they say, "I'm out of here." And I've got my relationship with God in my own personal way. You've probably heard that one before. Well, that's exactly what Jeroboam did with the nation Israel. We don't need to go God's way. We don't need to worship at the temple and follow through with the things that God had said. We can do it our own way. And they made themselves high places and they began worshiping other ways. So not one good king ever came out of the northern kingdom. And in this time, they had become so godless that many of them, and by the way, when you think of the 10 northern tribes, sometimes people will try to tell you about the 10 lost tribes, and there's a lot of weird ideas about the 10 lost tribes. They really weren't lost, because if you read closely, when the kingdom divided, many of the people from the north who were godly didn't want to worship falsely. They emigrated down to the south. So their tribal distinction still remained. In fact, Peter, when he writes to the 12 tribes of Israel scattered abroad, and God's promises to the entire nation. But here you find Ahaz, one of these kings of Judah. And Judah, the southern kingdom, pretty much had a number of good kings, but they also had some bad kings. He turned out to be a bad king. Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah. And it came to pass in those days that Rezin, king of Syria, now the Syrians were always their perennial enemy, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to make war against it. But he could not prevail against it. This is Isaiah's way of putting the overview there. He made war, but he couldn't prevail. In fact, if you go into the little bit of the history, and it always helps to look at some of the history account, in 2 Kings chapter 15 and 16, you see a little bit about what happened during this time. But then you get another viewpoint altogether from 2 Chronicles 28. The same history, different viewpoint. The king's history covers it that Pekah and Rezin tried to attack, and they got so far, but they were stopped, and eventually, you know, that there was a good thing that worked out, and Ahaz, though he wasn't a good guy, everything ended okay, sort of thing. You really get kind of a glossed over view. But when you come to the Chronicles, you realize what you're getting is God's view on what really happened. And in effect, what truly took place is that Syria and northern tribe of Israel, which is commonly called Ephraim, that was almost the name that was used because that was the dominant tribe. They came against Jerusalem in the time of Jotham and were turned away. God protected them. They were trying different ways to align together the enemies of God to try to attack God's people. And unfortunately, once the godless king came on the throne, they were vulnerable. And any type of leadership that is not set apart unto the Lord is going to make everyone vulnerable. And that's exactly what happens. So it was told to the house of David, verse 2 here, saying, Syria's forces are deployed in Ephraim. Now, a lot of history went in between verse 1 and verse 2, and we're just seeing the gloss. You know, Isaiah's just covering it all very quickly. But what took place was, during the time of Ahaz, Ahaz was overcome for a time. In fact, he was even captured. And he tried to make this whole alliance with Damascus and Assyria, and eventually he was captured. 120,000 of their men died, and another 240,000 were captured, until the prophet Obed went to the king of the northern kingdom and says, hey, you got to send those people back. You know, you better watch it. God will deal with you worse. And so they got convicted. Even the godless people were more sensitive in conscience than the ones that should have been godly. So they let them all come back, and now it seems this is the second attempt. After everything was established again, now he hears bad news again. It says, Syria's forces are deployed in Ephraim. That is in the northern kingdom. So his heart and the heart of his people were moved as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind. Whose heart? Obviously the heart of Ahaz and all the people were terrified again. They just had a big encounter and they just escaped. And now it's going to happen all over again? Well, the Lord said to Isaiah, go out now to meet Ahaz, you and Sheer-Shabab, that is your son. That was his son. Remember, his one son's name was Maher-Shal-Shabab. And this guy's name is Sheer-Shabab, or basically means there's a remnant. He says, go out with your son, and at the end of the aqueduct from the upper pool on the highway to the fuller's field. That doesn't do anything for us. Except if you do your homework, you find out this is the same place another enemy stood to look over the nation Israel. It was actually where the water supply was. And if you were a king back in those days, your number one concern was water. How are you going to get water? Because most of the cities were built on a hill. And the water sources are in between the hills and the valleys. So if an enemy comes, they can cut your water supply off. And then basically, you know, you can die of thirst inside there unless you have a lot of water stored up. And essentially, that's what they try to do. They'd store as much water as they could because their water supply would be cut off by an invading enemy. So he's looking out over the water situation. Later, his son Hezekiah comes up with an ingenious way to deal with that water problem. He actually carves a tunnel in solid rock 3/4 of a mile long. I've actually been through that tunnel. Tourists aren't allowed readily to go through it anymore because when you get to the other side, the Arabs throw stones at you. So they kind of cut that off right now. But it's a weird thing to walk through this tunnel. It was made in 700 BC, thereabouts. It's freaky. And you're looking at how they chipped this thing away out of solid rock with their little tools, 3/4 of a mile. But the most amazing thing is they started at each end and they met in the middle. And how they did that is an engineering feat that I have no clue. But at the very, when you come to the middle, it jogs a little bit because they missed each other just a little bit, so they heard themselves and eventually met up. So there's a little bit of an L shape in the middle. I got another story about that, but I'm going to bore you with that one. My wife, I blew her candle out walking through. I wanted to see how dark it was, you know. The whole group, we've got our candles, we're walking through this thing, and I kind of stood in the back and I blew my candle out and I says, honey, quick, my candle went out. So she came back all innocent with her candle. Here, honey, and I blew hers out. And I just want to see how dark it was. It was pitch dark. Couldn't see your hand in front of your face. Well, she got mad at me and splashed some water on me, and I got sick after that, and that's another story altogether. But this tunnel by Hezekiah's, by the son of Ahaz, which has nothing to do with Ahaz whatsoever, but let's go on. Well, he goes out to meet Ahaz by this water supply. And the Lord tells him to say to him, take heed and be quiet. Like, you know what? Here's a prophet coming to this king. A king has the authority to take your life or whatever. He could do whatever. He's a king. And he's given the authority to be bold with him. Goes out and said, you better listen up and shut up. That's what he's saying to the king, essentially. And then he says, and do not fear or be faint-hearted. I can imagine as he's looking at the water supply, he remembers his encounter with them before, he's terrified. He has no power against that enemy. He's figuring, what am I going to do? And he says, and do not fear or be faint-hearted, for these two stubs of a smoking firebrand. In a sense, what he's saying is they're two little sticks taken out of the fire that are starting to go out. They're just smoking now. They're not even, there's no fire anymore. They're nothing. He says, for the fierce anger of Rezin in Syria and the son of Remaliah. He doesn't even call Pekah by his name. There's a reason for that. Isaiah had no respect for this particular guy at all. God didn't have any respect for him. And one of the reasons is, you can go into the history of Israel and find there was no King Remaliah, so where did this guy, how did he get on the throne? When you look, he got on the throne by conspiracy and murder. He killed the king and took over the throne. But you know, he got his in the end because the same thing happens to him. One of his officials kills him and then takes over the throne. And that was kind of what Israel was all about at that time, the backslidden nation to the north. But Isaiah says, tell him don't fear. Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have plotted evil against you, saying, let's go up against Judah and trouble it, and let us make a gap in its wall for ourselves. That's synonymous with saying, make them dependent upon us. Make them vulnerable so they can't protect themselves. Because the city walls of Jerusalem were very, very much a fortress. And if they make a huge gap in the wall and keep that gap, then they can come in and out as much as they want. In other words, and then it says, and then set, notice, it says, and will set a king over them, the son of Tabal. Now, you have to do a little bit of a digging to find out who this guy was. He actually is Pekah, or the son of Remaliah. It's an encryption. It's a Hebrew transfixing of the letters to come up with the same person, only a different name for him. In other words, it's a very subtle way of saying, you know, I'm going to be king. Thus says the Lord God. Now, this is a promise that Ahaz has done nothing to deserve this glorious promise. This is free. This is like God just loves his people. Despite this wicked leader, he's going to fulfill his purpose. He says, tell him that thus says the Lord, it shall not stand, nor shall it come to pass, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. That is, there's going to be no change there. You know, Damascus will be the head of the capital of Syria and won't be coming down here to Jerusalem. They're not going to change anything of that nature. And he'll still be king in Damascus. But within 65 years, Ephraim will be broken. That is, the northern tribes will be history. Now, you can do your homework and find out that the date of the Assyrian conquest, when the Assyrians eventually come in and take the northern tribes, is to the year that he promises. So that he says, so it won't be a people. They won't even exist. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. He says, in the meantime, they're not going to take you either, because he'll still be the head of Samaria, and that will still be the head of Ephraim, so it's not going to change. In other words, Ahaz, doesn't matter what it looks like, doesn't matter what it appears to be, this will take place. Now he's got a promise. Now when you're in a crisis, and you have a promise, you have a choice. Have you ever been in a crisis where you really didn't feel there was much hope? Or there really didn't seem to be much way out of it? There's no way out of this one. Maybe you got the word cancer thrown at you by a doctor. Maybe some family situation that was utterly impossible to deal with. And you just feel distressed and depressed as a result of it. Here, Ahaz certainly was not deserving of any promise, but God made him a promise. Now you, being a child of God, if you put your trust in Jesus Christ, you have promises that are so amazing. But what bothers me is how few Christians really know that heritage, that inheritance, that blessing, that position that you have in Christ. blessed in with every spiritual blessings in the heavenly places. You have promises that are so amazing. And in fact, when you think about this, it all comes down to the promise that is made here and what is going to be believed by Ahaz. What is he going to truly believe? So the head of Ephraim, he says, is Samaria. The head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. And then what does he say? If you will not believe, surely you will not be established. This is a lesson for us all. You know, the word belief and established kind of go hand in hand. When you believe, you're on a rock. When you're showing yourself steady, you've rested in that truth. You're not going to be tossed to and fro by every, you know, fear and every doubt that comes your way. You know, I've often thought of a scenario that could picture what it's like for us oftentimes when we don't trust the Lord. And we lie because we feared what people are going to do, and we think we've got to lie to get ahead. Or we're